going forever. Moments go, time runs out. And then it hits you with the pain. Things are great on the way out. Nobody's with you when you're on the way down. You got what you wish for. Is that what
Welcome to the Gods to Ghosts Volleyball Podcast and your host, Scott Bemke. Our podcast today features Racine, Wisconsin's one and only Tom Sorensen. Over Tom's volleyball career competing indoors, he was the two-time high school player of the year at Racine Case High School playing for his cousin, Gary Sorensen. Tom then went on to compete collegiately at Pepperdine for the Waves and legendary coach Marv Dunphy, where he was a four-time All-American and led the Waves to the 1992 NCAA championship. Once his playing career in college concluded, Tom went on to compete for the USA men's indoor Olympic and national team in the 1996 Olympics, and then in 1997 was named the men's indoor team MVP. Without further ado, let's get started with Tom Sorensen, part one. All right, Tom. As a fellow Wisconsinite, it's pretty cool being able to get to interview you today. I'd be curious to hear about how you got your start in the sport, you know, where you grew up and your coaching and all the other fun stuff as far as your background goes. Growing up here in the Midwest?
Yeah, well, let's see. I grew up kind of out in the sticks of Racine, like near Franksville, Wisconsin, the crop capital of the country. and I was mostly a basketball player growing up. I mean, I played every sport, every team sport. I played soccer, baseball, basketball, football, you know, a lot. Like our neighborhood, we had games. Whatever season was in, we played baseball all summer. We played football all fall. I played basketball with me and one other guy in the neighborhood, kind of, we're only two guys into basketball, but I played that all the time, too. And I considered myself a basketball guy growing up. You know, I did summer camps at, you know, St. Cat's and whatnot, and, you know, all the camps around, and blah, blah, blah. And going into my freshman year, and, you know, in Wisconsin, that boys volleyball is a fall sport. We're in most states are spring sports, but in Wisconsin, it's fall.
Mm-hmm.
And just going into the season, my sister played volleyball, my sister Chris. And she just said, you should play volleyball. You know, I wasn't doing anything else. I kind of like, oh, well, you know, it's a lot of complementary movements. I get to work on my vertical. You know, there's pretty complementary sports. So I'll just, you know, I'll do that to help my basketball game. And just kind of, you know, the more I did volleyball, the less I wanted to do basketball. It just kind of took over my life, basically.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, and you had a good run of it, too. Now, your cousin, Gary Sorensen, I believe, was an outstanding coach there at Racine Case High School. What can you tell me about him as a coach and what you learned from him during your time playing for him?
Him as a coach, very intimidating guy. Still, you know, I always tell people about him, I was like, I played for two gold medal winning coaches. I call Doug, I call Marv, and I call Coach Sorensen. Even though we're related, you know, it's like, still when I see him, it's hard for me to get the words Gary out of my mouth. You know, it's like, but really cool story about, the story I found interesting about him was a few years back, I got inducted into the Pepperdine Hall of Fame, and I invited him to come because I really wanted him to be there, and he came to it and stuff like that, and we were sitting at the table. I was kind of telling some of the same stuff I'm telling you right now, the Marv story, Doug story, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you never realized this, but your success is what eventually led to Case being the dominant school in the state for, I think they had a three-peat at one time.
Right.
He's like, because of you and you bringing Marv out to come visit you and me getting a relationship with Marv, like he eventually went and did the volleyball camps at Pepperdine like 3-4 summers in a row.
Wow.
And it's like, because I got to bring back all the knowledge I learned at Marv's camps is basically what made Case become the power that it was in the state for all those years. And that kind of blew me away that, like, what I did had so much effect on what his life happened and, you know, the future of the high school and stuff like that. So I thought that was really interesting and something that never crossed my mind, you know?
Sure. Yeah, he was, I went to a camp that he had there at Parkside, you know, one summer, and I learned from him for, you know, a week than I did in my entire high school career from my coach. So, and yes, he wasn't an intimidating guy, I have to say. So,
well, I know that camp you're talking about is like actually myself and Dave Huffman, who I played with at Case, were the two first boys ever to go to that volleyball camp. So we were trailblazers. You know, we just wanted to play more volleyball. You know, it's like any way to learn more volleyball, play more volleyball. It's like we're just, you know, we knew Terry, of course, because all the triples were like, Terry, is it okay if we come to the camp? It wasn't an overnight camp or anything, so it wasn't like a big deal. It's like, for sure, just sign up for it. Like,
oh, wow. Yeah, you guys.
So, you know, at that time, I was just trying to find volleyball anywhere I could, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we're growing up in that area, once the bug hit you, who were some of the Wisconsin guys, older guys, either that played at Case before you, indoor around the state of Wisconsin, that were talented players that you kind of looked up to? I always think it's neat to hear that from like a Pepperdine national champion and USA Olympian, the fact that they were once just like the rest of us looking up to
somebody else. Like, I remember being in a volleyball triples tournament up in West Allis, I think like Pershing Park, I think it was. And I remember like Jay Goldstein was there, and he played at IPFW. And I was like, wow, a D1 college volleyball player's here playing. You know, you'd watch him play, and it's like just incredible, you know. Like, you know, I looked up to a lot of the guys. I mean, you know, most of the guys I looked up to, like Vaughn Podlegars of the world and Brian Dudley, Tim Peterson, you know, all those guys that were seniors when I was a freshman. Jerry Overstreet was a junior when I was a freshman. But Jerry Overstreet was like a great volleyball player and a great basketball player, probably one of the best athletes in our school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always tell the story because it's like, it's kind of thing like, don't think your words don't have meaning to people. You know, it's like, cause you can tell people things that mean a lot to them that may not seem that big of a deal to you. Like, I tell the story, it's like, I was a freshman, I think we were waiting to get on the bus or something like that, and we're like halfway through the season. I'm Jade, is a freshman, he's varsity, one of the starters.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember sitting around, and like, he decides to talk to me, that was even great that he's talking to me. I'm like, wow, cool, Jerry Overstreet's talking to me. You know, because I just consider myself kind of, you know, freshman, be a fly on the wall, nobody, you know?
Yeah, better than getting stuffed in a locker like most of us.
Yeah. But he's talking to me, and he goes, man, he's like, I mean, he just called me Sorensen. Man, Sorensen, next year you're going to be on varsity. And I was like, wow. Like to me, that was like the craziest thing. Like, I'm going to be on varsity? No way. And he told me, I was like, and I guarantee if I talked to him, he would not remember that one moment, not even a little bit. He'd probably, oh, I said that? That's cool. But to me at that time, it meant so much to me. You know, it was something like, holy cow, this guy thinks I'm good, and someone that I look up to thinks I'm really good, and I'm going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that sentence to me just meant the world to me at that time. So it's like, never underestimate what your words mean to people, you know, because sometimes they can have a huge effect on you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a perfect
example. Another story I always tell my kids, like, when we're doing, like, free ball drills, I'm like, these free balls have to be important, you know? It's like, you have to be able to pass a free ball. Like, it's a very important thing. Don't take it for granted. And I tell the story of like the other time I was in the room with the guys, or maybe on the bus, and I'm sitting there, and Tim Peterson, who was a senior like setter and outside hitter when I was a freshman, he just said kind of, you know, casually, like, you have to be able to pass a free ball. If you can't pass a free ball, you suck. And I was just like, oh my God, I have to make sure I pass a free ball good every time, because I do not want these guys to think that I suck. And it was like, it just meant so much, because it made it so important to me to pass free balls, you know. I was like, it drives me crazy that some people take it for granted.
Yeah.
He wouldn't remember that either, you know. I was like, but to me it meant a lot.
Yep. Now, you mentioned the infamous Vaughn Podlogar. What can you tell me about Vaughn as a player and as a person? He was quite a force of nature from my understanding.
Vaughn had a personality. Boy, it's like Vaughn is. I remember when I was in college, and Vaughn called me, but I wasn't in the room that day. My roommate was in there, a guy named Craig. He's like, yeah, some guy named Vaughn just called. He's like, I sound like a game show host. And that's truly how Vaughn is. Like the way he speaks and stuff like that's like so like over the top, kind of enunciated. It does kind of sound like he's a game show host half the time, you know. It's like, but he was just, you know, he was an electric guy. I mean, he was explosive, jumped. I mean, he didn't have the gift of height. I mean, I think Vaughn's maybe 6 feet tall on a good day. But he could get off the floor and do some things. He was a great, fun volleyball player to watch. You know, he's definitely a good guy. I know a lot of people like tried to copy his arm swing and stuff. He had kind of the hitch. He kind of hitched his arm like two or three times on each swing. But he did it well.
Yeah, he had one heck of a wrist snap, too. I always got a kick out of watching him. He was one of those guys that when you saw him, your eyes were always drawn to him. But both for personality-wise and his athleticism, he's something else. What about guys like? Is it your cousin Kevin Sorensen, or that played on the USA national team and then would come back and play in triples grass tournaments and stuff here in Wisconsin? I forgot the exact relation there, so let's hear a bit about.
He's Coach Sorensen's brother, Gigi Sorensen's brother. They're my father's first cousin, so they're like my first cousin once removed, I think is the official term.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but they're brothers. And I know him, we've met a bunch of times, but I didn't get to see him that often because he lived in Madison. And he would come around and play doubles against triple teams and win tournaments and stuff like that. He was an incredible volleyball player.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. He was really something else. I never got a chance to see him. I've seen him in some of those USA national team photos from back in the day. Like I think I saw one. Yeah. He was on a team with like Don Shaw and a handful of those guys. And but I never got a chance to see him play.
Been back in Chicago for a lot of years.
Oh, for those USVBA teams.
Yep. Okay. I unfortunately never really got a chance to play against him or with him for that matter, because right at the age when I was just about ready to start playing, like, you know, the top level at the grass tournament and stuff like that, he blew out his knee like that summer before.
Ouch.
And it was like one of those, like, literally everything out of his knee blew out. It was ACL, you know, whatever CL was in there, it was gone, basically, you know. It was basically like, well, hopefully you can come back and play softball, you know, because you're not playing volleyball anymore, you know. It's like,
right, and he's going to take up lawn sports, like croquet.
Exactly. You know, it's like, so I never really, I mean, I watched him play because I remember my years of, like, as a sophomore playing at, like, Slammin'-O-Rama, which used to be the big tournament in the state for a lot of years until the boat ride took over. But, you know, I watched him play when I was playing, like, A or B or whatever it is, you know, whatever the second level is. And then, so, kind of bummed I never really got a chance to play against him or with him for that matter.
Yeah, I would imagine. I just heard the stories about him and Todd Thompson and, playing in those triples tournaments, but they just played the two of them, and they just would wax teams.
Yeah.
Have you got any good Todd Thompson stories?
Only one that I have that I really remember was my friend back in high school, Dave Bear, who went on to play at Ball State, and this was in 1990. I was thinking about this. I know it was in 1990 because Dave Bear and I were going to be on the same Olympic Festival team in Minnesota.
Okay.
So we were just a couple weeks out from going to the Olympic Festival and being on the same team. And we were playing at grass tournament. I think I was at the same tournament, like the same place, Pershing Park up in West Dallas, I believe it was called.
Okay.
And Dave has, you know, Dave Bear's... talks a lot of crap. He's got kind of a punchable face. And, you know, my mom used to call him Eddie Haskell.
Oh, there you go.
Because he'd come in and he'd be, hello, Mr. Sorensen, how are you today? And, like, my mom knew that he was not, you know.
Meanwhile, he's stealing cookies out of the cookie jar when she's
exactly. But I was off for a bit, you know, just watching him play. And I'm sure Dave is saying stuff that he shouldn't be saying because it's Todd Thompson. That's, you know, that's dumb to talk to Todd Thompson. And all of a sudden, I see Todd Thompson go under net and just punch Dave right in the face.
Oh.
and like knocked a tooth out or two. And I, without thinking, I just run over there, and I'm saying, "What the hell are you doing?" Like, I kind of get in Todd's face as much as I can. You know, I think I had, because of who I was and my reputation around, I think I had kind of a safety bubble around me. Like, I don't think he would have hauled off and kicked my ass, which he certainly could have if he wanted to. It wouldn't have been a contest by any stretch. I'm sure he would have, you know, annihilated me. But
yeah, he was a tough guy.
Yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, he's one of those guys that he's a Mike Norman kind of guy, like in our neck of the woods.
Yeah.
Like, everyone has a Todd Thompson story, you know. It's like,
oh my goodness. But, you know, and did the cops get called and everything too, or what?
I don't think it ever. They may have come. I don't think it became a huge deal, you know.
Yeah, well, that's good. You know, kind of settle your differences, and I mean, yeah. Bayard learned a valuable lesson that day.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, what I should have said is like, I understand wanting to punch him, but you shouldn't do it.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah, Thompson. Yep. From what I heard was never afraid to. To settle things if it needed to get to that point.
No.
There was no gray area with him if you were disrespectful.
Yeah. I mean, if he wanted to, he could have destroyed me, and I knew that at that time, but I still, like, I didn't think about it. I was just like I said, I think because of who I was in that time, my reputation of being who I was, I probably had a little safety net around me.
Sure.
So, but yeah, he did that, and it was, I remember it. I can still see it in my mind's eye when I want to and kind of laugh about it.
Growing up here in the state of Wisconsin at that time, you know, most of the players that made it at the Division I level primarily came out of the state of California, so it wasn't too often that people from the Midwest were getting opportunities to go play there at that level. So at what point in high school did you realize that, okay, I'm pretty good and I'm getting contacted by some of these coaches and these big programs? And who were some of the people that were reaching out to you, Tom?
I think what I really, really started to believe was after I did, between my junior and senior year, I did Ken Preston's Top of Your Class volleyball camp, and I can still see the ad in the back of Volleyball Magazine.
So you went, was that at UC Santa Barbara, I think, then, maybe?
It was at UC Santa Barbara, yeah. Okay. That was my first time ever getting on a plane.
Wow.
I'd never been on a plane before that. My mom and dad were kind enough to buy me tickets, an airplane ticket, to go out there, and just sent me on my way. You know, so.
Well, that's a nice trip to go up to that campus on that cliff.
Oh, for sure. So while I was there, you know, I at the risk of sounding incredibly arrogant, I dominated at the camp. And then Ken Preston took me around a tour of UC Santa Barbara and offered me my first full scholarship.
Wow.
And that was kind of, that blew me away.
Yeah.
And then after that, I started getting phone calls, you know, a few times a week, you know. I tell a story about that time. This was, you know, this is 1988. I graduated high school in 1989, so... Like, Marv sort of, like, when Marv called me, like, you gotta remember, he just came off winning the gold medal in the Olympics of Seoul, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm literally getting a phone call from the gold medal winning coach, and I just recorded every single match they played, and I probably rewatched him, you know, 5-10 times over.
Sure.
And even my mom would be like, "Is Marv Dunphy on the phone?" And I'm like, holy, you know, it's like terrifying, you know? It was like,
oh, I believe it. I would imagine that's a call you never dreamed you'd get, and then there it happens.
Yeah, but it was like, you know, so each coach, it was Bob Yoder from USC, Preston from Santa Barbara, and, you know, Marv at Pepperdine. Each, they flew me out there to their campuses and, you know, gave me the tour and whatnot and blah, blah, blah. But they also, each coach came to visit me in Wisconsin also. So, like, Marv came through, you know, and spent the day with me in high school. Like, he walked around with me in my classes and stuff like that.
Wow.
And for me, I'm just like, holy cow, this is the gold medal winning coach hanging out with me today, you know? I was like, and it's like, if you could ask me any person that I could have come visit me, you know, it probably would have been, like, Karch first and, you know, Timmons, blah, blah, but, like, having Marv Dunphy come to your high school and stuff like that and hang out with you is pretty damn cool when you're a volley nerd.
Oh, I bet. I bet all your high school teammates were cutting class and showing up in your
day. Yeah.
You're not in this class. Oh, I am today.
Yeah. Like, I was trying to, you know, I try and tell my kids, like, if they want to be good at volleyball, I tell them, you know, it's hard for me to understand because, like, I was so different than so many of these kids. Like, I hungered for volleyball. Like, I when Volleyball Magazine arrived in the mail, it was, like, the best day of the month.
Yeah, I can relate.
And I read it from cover to cover. I knew every volleyball coach. I knew every volleyball camp. I read the Concepts of Coaching article. You know, I read the Beach stuff. I mean, I literally read the whole thing. And, like, I try and describe to them, like, I would get the TV guide would come, the hard copy would come every week. I'd go to the back, and I was had, you know, and I was had on the football, the basketball, the baseball, and then it had other sports at the very end. And I would just look for anything volleyball that was going to be on TV. Yeah. And if I found it, I'd record it. And then if it was good, I'd watch it over and over again. I remember I watched the Norseca qualifier, if it was USA versus Cuba. That was in Cuba. That was at the Ciudad Deportiva in Cuba. And it was a 5-set match, and Craig Buck wasn't playing because he was hurt. Like, Mark Miller was the other middle blocker, and it was just, I mean, I must have watched that match 100 times, even though the USA lost. It was still just such great volleyball.
Was that Joel Despagne on Cuba?
Joel Despagne was a very young Joel Despagne. This other guy was really good, who actually got in a motorcycle accident years later, so he kind of never became the player. His name was Ricardo Goycochea, who was just awesome too.
Yep.
And I must have watched that thing, you know, 30 times, 40 times.
Good old VHS tapes, right?
Yeah, I was like, you know, there's a part of me that kind of argues with myself. Like, I see these kids and how much volleyball they can play, and there's so much, you know, it's all the clubs, there's, you know, all the camps, there's, you can watch everything on YouTube, but, you know, it's like, and I think, God, it would be so nice to, you know, they're so lucky to have it the way they do. But then I think back, like, how much I just loved the hunt for volleyball, like, trying to find, mm-hmm. you know, finding our little niches back in the day. You know, remember you just started to get that flyer in the summer with all the triples tournaments of all summer long.
Yep.
And we'd all put in our $9 piece to win some really cheap T-shirt, you know. And then, you know, drink beer afterwards or whatever, you know.
Yeah, those Mark Tomczyk grass tournaments that he would throw.
Oh, God,
then he'd win a chair and an umbrella, and it was the coolest chair or umbrella you ever got in your life.
I would drink Cokes the entire time. I'd candy bars. I'd eat, like, crap. And stuff.
Yeah, didn't know any better back then.
Not thinking at all about hydration or anything. It's like, they were the best. I tell people all the time, grass triples is such a great way to learn volleyball.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it was so much fun.
Before we get into more info on Pepperdine and what made you decide to go there, I wanted to get back to that top of the class camp that you attended up there at Santa Barbara. So I just remember that era of the sport had so many great guys and players. So who are some of the talented fellow high school guys that you met there at that camp? And you know, how did they treat you? You know, being the outsider, the hick from French Lick, you know, who are some of the more talented guys that you enjoyed watching play at that camp?
Well, I mean, they treated me well because I was good. You know, it's like, and I think they're also just intrigued. Also, you know, it's like, you know, they always said, "Oh, you're from back east." You know, anything east of Vegas to California people is back east.
Yeah, I believe
it's like, no, I'm not from back east. I'm from the Midwest. Like, yeah, that's back east. You know, it's like.
Oh, man.
But, like, who's, like, Dwayne Cameron was there, who later went on to play with me at Pepperdine. Sure. Greg Schickel. Jimmy Blackman was there, who was a setter at Stanford. God, there's something like that. I think, I'm pretty sure the Canyon was there, and Dave Swadek was there.
Oh, yeah, that's from the...
I mean, it was just, like, it was really, really high-level stuff, you know. It was, like... And I remember the coaches as much as I remember players. Like, Don Shaw was there. Harlan Cohen was there. Obviously, Ken Preston was there. You know, it's like... You know, it was fun. It was
the who's who, basically.
Yeah, it was. You know,
and
it was still like probably the cheesy. I tell the story all the time, and it's and like I said, at that time, like not many from like Rod Wild was really the first one to do it. Rod Wild from Fort Dodge, Iowa, in 1977 or whatever, went out to Pepperdine,
mm-hmm.
and obviously became an incredible volleyball player. Was an incredible volleyball player before he went there, but. I would say, but that didn't lead to any to more people going from the Midwest out. That was kind of a standalone thing that happened.
Right.
Where I feel like what I like to see, what I enjoyed seeing was like after I did it, you know, 2-3 years after that, I could look at other rosters and see kids from Wisconsin and other rosters. That always made me really happy.
Yeah, what, like Nygaard, you know, and then yeah, you also like had Todd Reimer was a stud after you at Case. He was a really good player in your footsteps.
Yep. And I just remember, I think I was talking to Mike Seeley of UCLA, and Nygaard was a redshirt. He was redshirting this freshman year, and they just kept talking about this kid Nygaard. Oh, we got this kid Nygaard from La Follette or from Wisconsin. They wouldn't say La Follette, but. Mm-hmm. And he's really, really good. And I think they thought that, to me, that was kind of going to hurt me because I wanted to be the only good Wisconsin guy. But I was like, that's great, man. I love seeing more Wisconsin guys coming out there. Because there are a lot of great players back in the day from Wisconsin that nobody just came to see.
Sure. Slipped through the cracks.
I coach club now, and, you know, we'd have these little weekend things at, like, Palos, which is a small little gym here in the Chicago area. And there might be 15 coaches there, 20 college coaches there recruiting. And I'm thinking back to like 1988 when we had our state tournament, which was literally every team in the state came to the Kohl Center at UWM. And at the beginning of the day, you started in pools, and by the end of the day, you had the state champion. So a school could have come and seen every single player play in the state in one day. And only once I remember, Ball State was there my junior year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only time I ever saw a college recruiter there. And I was just like, and that was a big deal. I said, hey, you see Ball State's here? Do you see Ball State's here? Hey, Ball State's here. And I was like, you know, huge deal. And that's they started recruiting me then too. But the funny story about that was after my junior year, was Dave Chelios was recruiting from Ball State. Well, the only real club team around at that time was Evanston down in, you know, north of Chicago. And Gene Keefe, his name was, had heard about me. And he called, you know, Dave Chelios to get my number. And apparently Dave Chelios said to Gene, no, we don't want anyone else to see him. Because Gene was, you know, going to take me to USVBAs and stuff like that. And he's like, what? What are you talking about? He's like, no, we don't want anyone else to see him. We don't want him going to Nationals. We don't want him to do it because we want to keep it to ourselves, basically. But Gene's just like, come on. Like, I can call, like, he knew Kevin. I can call Kevin. I can get his phone number somewhere. Don't be stupid, basically. You know, they finally just gave it to him, but that was the spiel I gave him at first. You know, so it's kind of funny. But I mean, think of that. There's like Mike Dahlquist was, I think maybe an inch shorter than me, but probably jumped 6 inches higher than me. It was like someone would want to recruit him. Stefan Stamato was another guy who got recruited out of that time too. Went down to Ball State.
Yeah, he Dave was Bear, at Greg Tulsa, Romano. I think, right? And he was from. Brazil or something originally, and then came up here or something, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, at one time, I think it was like in 97, both Reimer and Romano were out training with the U.S. team. So I was like, wow, three kids from Racine are currently training on the U.S. volleyball team. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, you can say that again.
And, of course, the Racine Journal Times never did a story on it.
Yeah. Who knows what they were. Now with the recruiting, you know, you're getting, yeah, USC and, UC Santa Barbara and then Pepperdine, you know, three primary California colleges like that. What ultimately decided it for you in terms of, attending Pepperdine?
I just really wanted to play for Marv.
Aside from that horrifically depressing campus.
Yeah, well, I tell people all the time, it's like I probably had the least amount of fun on my visit to Pepperdine. Like, when I visited Ohio State, I went there during Michigan weekend. When I went to UC Santa Barbara, I went when they played UNLV in basketball. When I went to USC, I went to the USC-UCLA game, football game. So I really went to, like, all the best weekends and stuff like that. And Pepperdine, I think I saw, like, the Loyola Marymount basketball game, which was fun. Mm-hmm. But I definitely had more fun at those other schools, but I knew I wanted to play for Marv, so.
Yeah, and that was a heck of a recruiting class, too, with who all came in. So you're a freshman, you get there on campus, you and Dwayne Cameron, that was like, two home runs for Marv to get you guys. You guys were like 1A and 1B in terms of like the Fab 50 and the top recruits in the country, so to get both you guys, I'm sure he was... Looking new, yeah. New the thing. You're destined for good things. But yeah, who else was in there?
was myself. It was, like I said, Dwayne Cameron. It was Lee LeGrand. Greg Schenkel was the top guy, too. And Dave Martin was a setter.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was a really, really good class. You know, Pepper and I had just been coming off of, you know, a couple down years, so it was a, you know, it probably would have been easier just to go to USC because they had a really strong team, and I put, you know, but I don't know, Marv was just my guy.
Wow, yeah, and then that first year competing there, you know, what was that like playing in that conference, and you know, who were some of the players that you competed against that you were just like, as a freshman, that you're like, wow, I'm hoping I'm going to get to that point at some point by the time.
Well, I mean, that was the beginning of kind of the dominant opposite era where so many opposites at that time were getting, you know, 7-8 kills a game. Brent Hillier came in at that time,
mm-hmm.
who was always one of the better players. Brian Ivey was incredible. I mean, Brian Ivey was like 2- or 3-time player of the year, freshman of the year. I mean, just an all-around great volleyball player, you know. He could do right side, he could do middle. He eventually became pretty good on the beach. But I'd say Ivey was great. Oh, man. Stanford had, like, Scott Fortune just left at that time. Duncan Blackman was there. Good friend of mine.
Wasn't Dave Goss up there at Stanford too? I remember him.
Dave Goss, yep.
He was a pretty talented guy. I remember him having some 50 plus kill.
He could catch fire and that'd be tough to stop.
Absolutely.
But that's not like every team had their guy like that. You know, Mike Deal at UC Santa Barbara and then UCLA later. I mean, if you just go to the right sides down the line, it's just tough.
Yep.
Even San Diego State had a good team back then, you know, like Eric Edeberry, Mike Mataraki, those guys are good, you know. Always disappointed. Johnny Hyden, of course. John Hyden was great.
Yeah, he was a heck of a player.
Now, I'm just thinking like all the high school days. One high school story that probably my favorite high school story now, and it's not really a high school story, it's a story about a thing that happened in high school, basically. And just about love of volleyball and like how focused I was and volleyball was my thing. It was my junior year of high school. Well, first of all, I gotta change the story a little bit. In 1997, a former teammate of mine came out to visit me, a guy named Jeff Squires. You may remember him, as his nickname was Hollywood. We called him Hollywood Squires. It's always my favorite nickname I've given somebody. But he came out, he was going on his honeymoon in Europe, and he wanted to come visit me when I was playing pro in Falconara in Italy. And I'm like, sure, God, I'd love the company. You know, right now, all I have is CNN International and Turner Classic Movies. So if I can speak English to somebody, I would be glad to. So please come visit me. I'm bored all the time when I'm not playing. So he finally tracks me down. Like, he has to call my mom, and my mom gets my number, blah, blah, blah. So he comes to me, finds me in Italy. And he says to me, hey, first thing I'll do is I want to say I'm sorry. And like, you're sorry? Sorry for what?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, when we were in high school, we had a class together. And it was our junior year. And the teacher, the first day of class, the teacher said, what do you see yourself doing in 10 years? And you said, you see yourself playing in the Olympics. And he said, and I laughed at you. He's like, I thought you had no chance in hell that you were going to play in the Olympics. So I remember that. And I just want to come back and tell you I'm sorry. And I'm like, wow, I really appreciate you saying that. I mean, I don't remember it. It didn't hurt my feelings or anything, but, you know, I appreciate you saying that. It's just kind of, it's one of my stories that, like, I decided at this time that this is what I was going to do. It wasn't a later decision.
So, in 1992, your Pepperdine Waves won the NCAA title over the Stanford Cardinal. What can you tell me about that season? How did things come together for you guys? What were some of your highlights when you reflect back on that championship year for you guys, Tom?
Well, oh God, there's quite a few things that I remember vividly. Like I remember there's a drill in practice that we did. We're always, you know, our focus was to be a good side-out team. You know, we had good passing. You know, Alon Goodberg just arrived from Israel, who was an unbelievable passer and great hitter, great volleyball player. But our focus was we're going to be a side-out team. You know, at that time, you know, siding out is always important. But, you know, when it's scoring, you can only score when you serve, it's, you know, extra important.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a drill that we played against the second team. We had to get three in a row before they got one in a row. Very, very hard drill, very, very high standard. And like, we could not win that drill. We could not win that drill. Finally, like maybe 3 months of the season, like maybe in late March, we finally beat the second team in that drill. And it was like, that kind of like just flipped a switch for us. We won that drill, and then maybe 5 days later, we went to play at Northridge. And Northridge is our nightmare school. We could not beat Northridge. Like, they just had our number. They were like kind of this island of misfit toys that just came together and clicked well. You know, Matt Unger, Coley Kyman, Chris McGee on the bench, Kenny Lynch, Axel Hagar, and they just, Rafael Tolino, they just beat us all the time. Like, for some reason, they just had our number.
Yeah.
So we win that drill, and then 5 days later, we go play at Northridge, and we must have beat them 3-0 in about an hour and 15 minutes. Like, we just went through them, and that was like hitting the monkey off of our back, basically. And it was just like, we just felt like we were invincible after that. You know, like, later on, we won our half of the division of the conference, and then Long Beach State won their half of the conference, and they were number one all year. And we played them in the first match, and that determined who got the automatic bids in the Final Four, and then the other team dropped back into the brackets with everybody else. And I remember my best friend Bill in college was like, "How do you think you guys are going to do?" I was like, "We're going to win." And he's like, "I know you're supposed to say that, but how do you really think you're going to do?" I was like, "No, we are going to win." And it's like, I believed in my heart of hearts that we were going to win for sure. And like, we were just so strong in mind. We believed so much that we were going to win. And the last thing I remember was, I remember myself and Lee LeGrand in the vans to the finals match to play Stanford. And he and I were talking about how often we were going to wear our rings. It's like, "Oh, I'm never taking my ring off," because we knew we were going to win. We fully believed we were going to win. You know, we thought we deserved it. We earned it. We worked hard enough to that we were going to win. And of course, I think I've worn my ring three times in my life. Before I got it, I planned on wearing it all the time.
You got it out. Don't you have it on like a chain on a necklace all the time now?
I think it's just in a cup and on like in my back room or something.
You don't fondle it like Gollum and call it precious.
No, my precious. No.
Lord of the Rings and stuff. You know.
No.
Do you remember?
Awesome. Like, I also get jealous too. Like now that they show the whole matches on TV, I get so jealous because ours was on CBS, and it was sliced down to a one-hour show, and it just butchered the entire match.
Well, drives me nuts.
I mean, it's like, yeah, and that match had 31 kills and 3 errors, and on the TV coverage, I think they showed maybe 3 or 4 of my kills and like all 3 of my errors. It's like, killing me, man.
Yeah, here you are, the biggest event of your life, and you know, you used to love watching it on TV, and they didn't do it quite the way you wanted it. That's a bummer.
Yeah. Well, I always remember my I was a freshman in high school, and I went over to Brian Peterson's house. He was a year older than me. He was one of my setters and stuff. And he had a videotape of USC and Pepperdine in the '85 finals. And that was the first time I ever really got to see like really high level volleyball. And that's one that your boy Adam Johnson lost to Pepperdine, so just so you know.
Oh, yeah, he had some pretty heartbreaks in there in those finals.
Yeah, but and it was the first time I'd ever seen volleyball played like that, and I was just like, I want to do that. You know, I was like, when I watch it, I love that. That's great. That's what I want to do.
Yeah, and you guys did it that season, and didn't you have a freshman setter there, too, in Chip McCaw?
Chip was a freshman from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always impressed by someone that can come in. He must have had a real level head and had some confidence to go with that talent to fit in with, upperclassmen like that, and then just, you know, deliver under pressure situations. What'd you think of him as a setter? Did he come out of the gate really well, or did it take him a little while to get
Chip was a great volleyball player. Like, it was a decision at first whether Chip was going to be a setter or an outside hitter, because Chip had an unbelievable arm. I mean, he could hit the crap out of the ball. He was a great hitter, good athlete, you know. So that was kind of part of his decision making, was did he want to be a setter? Did he want to be an outside hitter? Because, man, that guy could turn on the ball and hit the crap out of it.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. I watched him at a couple AVP events in Chicago, like, years ago, yeah. And he would play right side. And, yeah, he was I was like, damn, this guy's – I mean, it must be rough to be able to set that well and then be that smooth of a passer and hitter. Like, damn it.
He's definitely one of the toughest guys I've ever played with, both mentally and physically. He's just super tough.
Yeah.
And he's always – he had this great calm demeanor about him where it's like he might, like, trap set me at some time or something like that. I almost want to turn around and yell at him for trap setting me, which I shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
But he would just kind of look at me with kind of this half smile on his face like, sorry, man. That would just kind of it would diffuse everything immediately, you know. Because I knew he knew. All right, he knows. Blah blah.
Yeah.
On the next thing, you know, because he just kind of had the smile, like put you in a bad situation there. You know?
Like, oh, you like that Luigi set there, Sorensen?
Yeah, and of course I would be stupid enough to swing on a trap set when I probably should just tip and like maybe try and play it up or something like that. But no, sure. Stupid me, just knucklehead. Hit, you know.
Yeah, like, trying to go through the wall.
Yeah. I mean, if I could go back and tell my younger self things, like, tip a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's okay to tip, you know. It's like...
Yeah, gosh. So, yeah, you guys had a stacked team. You had, Dane Blanton was on that team, too. And, I mean, when you look back on it, you had quite a talented crew. So,
Yep, Alon Grinberg, Dane Blanton, Chip McCaw. Well, the big thing was, like... I would say the thing that really turned us around was like our middle blockers really just started touching a lot of balls. Like
Ian Clark was on that team too, wasn't
Ian
he?
Ian Clark, yep. Ian Clark and Lee LeGrand kind of always competed for that other middle spot. Dwayne always had one locked down, and then they competed for another one. Mm-hmm. And kind of went back and forth all year to finally Lee got it at the end. Lee just played really well.
Yeah, I always loved watching him on the beach and the six man with those pike blocks. Yeah, he could really put people in a phone booth. So, geez, yep. That's a stacked team. Unbelievable. Hey, I wanted to ask you, I always, was Sam Lagana, like, doing announcing at Northridge or when you guys would play? And he had this classic way of announcing you about being the pride of Racine.
It was so gold. It just amused me to death every single time we'd go play at Northridge.
Yeah.
And he'd go through from Laguna Beach, California, number 7, Dane Blanton, you know, they'd be, and from the volleyball capital of the world, Racine, Wisconsin.
Yeah. 6, in that beautiful voice it is.
It's like, oh, yeah, it was just so great. Like, I don't know why he just decided to do that for me, but I just loved it. It's so great.
Yeah, he's that guy's has such a class act and one of the all-time best. But yeah, he reminded me of that when he would say that about you, and I could just picture hearing it. I bet that you were grinning like a kid ear to ear every time he did that. Oh, man. Oh, that is some good stuff.
I always had the thought that maybe instead of saying Racine, Wisconsin, that I should say I'm from North Beach, Wisconsin, and make myself sound more California, you know.
Right.
Racine has that beach down there, North Beach. Don't be from Racine. Be from North Beach, Wisconsin.
The Manhattan Beach of the Midwest.
Yeah, exactly.
So you guys ended up defeating Stanford, won the national championship, and... didn't you have like 50 some odd kills in one of your matches during your time there too, which is a rare club to be in as far as kills back in the old game.
Yeah, one of the cool things that happened like recently was one of my former players became a graduate assistant up at Jamestown playing for Riley Salmon.
Oh, sure.
Or coaching with Riley Salmon, I should say, not playing, but... And Jamestown, right before the pandemic started, Jamestown went out to Pepperdine to play a match. I think it was the last match Pepperdine played before the... But, you know, they got there, and of course Riley took them up to meet Marv and stuff. And Marv brought out this old stat sheet from us playing UCLA. And in this match, I posted it on Facebook, and there's a picture of it, but it's like, we beat UCLA in 4... and we beat them 15-0 in the fourth set.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's actually, like, I have no stats to back this up. I don't have any knowledge at all. But like that's the year that UCLA actually went on to win the national championship that year, my senior year. So it's my contention that's the only time that a national championship team has ever gotten bageled, you know, by any team in a season. So it's like, but in that match, I had like 53 kills. And I think I had like only six errors or something like that. It's like 600.
Wow.
But I remember because, well, I remember because that was great. But every time I talk about to Nygaard, he always says, I didn't play that game. I was out that game. He got benched.
It would have been a different story, Tom.
But Nygaard, yeah, exactly. I didn't play that game. I wasn't in that game. But I just remember Eric Sullivan was a freshman at that time. And I was a senior. And, like, Eric Sullivan got me. He goes up and blocks me one time. And he starts talking shit to me, pardon my French. And I was just like, this freshman is going to talk shit to me? Like, you know, mm-hmm. four-time All-American, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like, and I was like, all right, it's on now. And then I start going, and Chip just starts sending me balls, and I'm hitting over him and stuff like that, hitting around him. And I'm just like, I swear, where you at, Rook? Where you at? You know, so, and I just proceed to get kill after kill. And I wound up with 53 kills, and we won the fourth set. And this is in four sets.
Right.
So, like, I always bring it up to him. I was saying, it's like, man, if you guys could have sided out a little bit better, I would have had the kill record.
Yeah, you would have been over 60 if it went five games.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that's pretty, that's some good stuff. Oh, man. Yeah, you Sullivan learned a valuable lesson that day, not to piss off a senior caliber of you.
I just laugh now because now if you get 25 kills now, it's that's a big match,
right?
But I hear kids, oh man, I'm tired. I got like 40 swings last night, like 40. I got triple digits often. if I got less than 50 sets, it was a weird match. Yeah, it's like I don't want it to go back. I like this game the way it is now. Like I'm not one of those old people that's like, the game should still be shutout scoring and no libero. Like no, I love the game the way it is now. I think it's great.
This concludes part one of our interview with Tom Sorensen. Thanks so much for listening. As a reminder, we have a website, which is godstoghosts.com, where all of our podcasts, video interviews, transcribed interviews, and an assortment of photos that we've acquired that capture the history of the sport are all available to you. I also want to give credit to the musicians that we use during our podcast. The opening track is from the band Sponge. The song title is Rainin', off the album Rotting Pinata. The closing track, which you'll hear in a moment, is from the band Magna Carta Cartel. The song title is That It's Already Too Late, off the album Good Morning Restrained. Stay tuned for part two with Tom Sorensen.